about Gurdwara's here. So the Gurdwara says, these other sages make use of small collections of ideas they have carved out from the infinite sky of the mind of Vyasa. They take advantage of these borrowed ideas like people who pick up things discarded from someone else's house. In this same vein is this statement by Parashara Muni in Sri Vishnu Purana. Then, during the 28th period, the great master, my son Vyas, divided the one Veda, with its four divisions, into four separate books. And just as this brilliant editor arranged into various books the entire text of the Vedas, so have other Vyasas in the past, including me. You should know, O best of Brahmins, that in each cycle of four ages, the branches of the Vedas are thus organized by a different Vyasa. But Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, know it well, is the Supreme Lord Narayan himself. Who else on earth, O Maitreya, could be the author of the Mahabharata? You can imagine if the next Vyasadeva, Ashwatthama, writes Mahabharata, it may come out a little different. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Why? Because he's talking in the previous manvantara?
He has divided the Vedas. He says, just as myself divided the Vedas in the last.
Hold on a second.
He was previously asked.
Well, Vyasta is a past passive parcel, but it could possibly be referring to the future. You're reading the translation. But yeah, Parashar was, yes. The sages serve, well, why not? Oh, yeah. Generally, sages and demigods live for a duration of a whole manvantara. And they may even live longer, but their terms of office run one manvantara. And then they're out of office, but they don't have to die, even after a manvantara. So, for Parashara to be living from one Dwapara Yuga to the next, that's okay. He's one of the seven sages. He was one of the seven sages. Something like that. The previous age he was. Yes?
Can he speak in the future as well? Like saying that he will divide or he has divided, because then it puts his actual conversation with Maitreya at a different point of time.
Bum, bum, bum. I don't know when Vishnuprana was supposedly spoken. Before it was spoken again by Sutta Goswami. Parashara spoke it before Sutta spoke it, but I don't know how much long before. Vishnu Purana. This is Parashara talking in the Vishnu Purana. I don't know exactly when Parashara spoke it. No, Parashara is talking in the Vishnu Purana. Parashara is the main narrator of the Vishnu Purana. Okay. But I don't know exactly when he narrated it. It was certainly before the beginning of this Kali Yuga, because it was spoken, he spoke it before Sutta spoke it again. But I don't know exactly how far back. Anyway, Parashara could have spoken it in a previous Divya Yuga. He could have spoken, even a previous Manvantara, possibly. And he could have spoken it just a few years before Sutta Goswami. Either way is possible. Yes?
Matsavatar Prabhu was saying that there's a list of all
28 yesterdays?
In the Vishnu Purana, what was it? Skanda Purana.
Skanda Purana, and he said that Parasara was one of those past 27.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. But whether he exactly spoke these words back then or whether he spoke them more recently, we don't know.
Okay.
When he was in office or after he retired, I don't know. He was a previous Vyasa, okay. In other words, I don't know. I don't have an answer to this. Yeah. Let's continue. Skande eva. This is quoted by Madhvacharya in his Brahma Sutra Bhasha. Skande eva. Nadayanad vinishpannam gyanam krita yuge stitam kinchitadanyata jatam tvetayam dvapare kilam Gautamasya Rishikshapad Gyane Twagyana Tam Gate Sankirna Buddhayo Deva Brahma Rudra Puraksara Sharanyam Sharanam Jagwur Narayanam Anamayam Tire Vigyapita Karyastu Bhagavan Purushottamaha Avatirno Mahayogi Satyavatyam Parasharad Utsannan Bhagavan Vedan Ujahara Harik Swayam Iti. In the Skanda Purana we read, Lord Narayan generated the original knowledge in this world. It stayed intact through Krita Yuga. In Treta Yuga it became somewhat corrupted, and in Dwarpa Yuga altogether so. Where knowledge had thus gradually turned into ignorance because of Gautama Rishi's curse, the confused demigods, headed by Brahma and Rudra, went to ask protection from Narayan, the faultless provider of shelter. That personality of Godhead, the greatest of mystics, informed of what they needed him to do, then descended to earth as the son of Parashara from the womb of Satyavati, and so Lord Hari himself restored the neglected Vedas. I'm going to continue, and then we'll look at the commentary, and then we'll discuss. Veda shabdinatra puranadi dvayam api grihyate tadevam itihasa purana vichara eva shreyan iti siddham tatrapi puranasya eva garima drishyate uktam hi naradiye Vedartadadikam manye puranartam varanane Vedat pratishtitak sarve Purane natra samshayah Puranam anyata kritva Tiryagyonima vapnuyat Sudantanto pi sushanto pi Nakatim kvachid apnuyat. The word Veda in this context also implies the Puranas and Itihasas, because the statement from Parashara was about Vyasadeva editing the Vedas, and Jiva Goswami affirms that that includes the Puranas and Itihasas. Thus we have established that the best way to proceed is to examine the Itihasas and Puranas. Okay, he's not going to argue anymore. He's presented all his evidence. You know, the lawyers present their cases and then they submit it to the jury to decide. Then he says, moreover, there is evidence that of these two, the Puranas are more important. As stated in the Narada Purana. O lovely one, I consider the message of the Puranas more important than that of the Vedas. The Puranas provide a firm foundation for all the Vedas. Of this there is no doubt. A person who disrespects the Puranas will have to take his next birth as an animal. Even if very much self-controlled and peaceful, he will achieve no good destination. Okay. Puranas, even more important than Itihasa. Commentary. Just as infinite space is all accommodating, the mind of Vedavyas is all knowing. The Vedic sages are not only mystics, but also expert communicators. They systematically teach practical means by which persons entangled in material life can also become self-realized. The position of Vyasa, the editor of the Vedas, is held by various sages in different periods. Of these sages, Dvaipayana Vyasa is incontestably the greatest. His father, Parashara Rishi, teacher of Maitreya Rishi, and narrator of Vishnu Purana, attests to this. In the Vishnu Purana, Maitreya Rishi is asking questions of Parashara. He's the disciple of Parashara. Previously, in the 26th Dwarpa Yuga of the current Vaivavsvata Manvantara, Parashara himself was Vyasa. That's 26th or 27th. Okay. I'll put a question mark. That can be answered by looking at the Skanda Purana. Bhardrampu, could you check Skanda Purana, find the reference here, and check whether he's 26 or 27? Continuing. Oh, wait. But Krishna Dvaipayana, as an incarnation of Narayan in the 28th Dwarpa Yuga, excels all other Vyasas. He best knows the whole purpose of the Vedas. If someone said 27, do you know that, or are you just presuming it must be 27? Do you have a reason? Yeah. Well, was it the exactly previous one, or two before? I don't know. Okay, we have to check. With the progression of the four ages, the intelligence of living beings naturally decreases, and their understanding of the Vedas gradually weakens. Gautama Rishi's cursing of the Brahmin class coincidentally helped accelerate this spontaneous process of degradation. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan summarizes the Varaha Purana's account of this event. Gautama once received a benediction that his fields would always produce abundant rice. So when the country surrounding his ashram was struck by a severe drought, he took the opportunity to host many learned Brahmins and feed them. The drought eventually ended, and the Brahmins wanted to return to their villages, but Gautama did not want to give them permission to leave. The Brahmanas then created an illusion of a cow to fool him, and when Gautama touched the false cow, it appeared to fall dead. His guests pretended to be horrified by witnessing the killing of a cow and used the incident as a pretext for leaving. Gautama then strictly observed the prescribed atonement for such an inauspicious act. Later, after discovering that the Brahmins had deceived him, he angrily cursed them and all their colleagues to lose their Vedic knowledge. That's how the Vedas got spoiled, or forgot, confused. The eternal Vedas never actually suffer corruption. Rather, it is the Brahmin class, meant to study and teach the Vedas, who fall from their standards of purity and neglect their social responsibilities, and then true Vedic knowledge becomes more and more inaccessible. In its stead appears perverted forms of knowledge, materialistic and impersonal misinterpretations. Thus in the Skanda Purana passage cited in text 16.2, Vedic knowledge is described as utsanna, a word that carries several related meanings, forgotten, neglected, falling apart, and decaying. As Srila Jiva Goswami has previously stated, the Itihasas and Puranas are especially important in Kali Yuga for access to Vedic knowledge. The Itihasa epics and Puranas have the same apaurusheya authority as the Vedas, and they faithfully explain the Vedas, in this way revealing the higher purposes of life. In the above verses cited from the Narada Purana, Lord Shiva tells his wife Parvati that he considers the message of the Puranas more important than that of the Vedas. By this he means not that anything is lacking in the Vedas, or that they can be improved upon, but that simpler explanations are given in the Puranas. The simpler explanations given in the Puranas are less likely to be misunderstood. Okay, that's Anucheta 16. Any questions? Yes.
I have two questions. One is actually referring to a point from last class.
Go ahead.
The last class it gave the argument that anybody can read the Vyasas and Puranas, just as anybody can chant the holy name.
Yes.
And then he quotes a verse about the holy name.
Yes.
But I don't see like any.
Any statement that anybody can read the Puranas.
Yes. And I don't understand like the connection, the logic that he...
It's just giving an analogy, similar to the situation of the Holy Name. I guess there's no big controversy over that. You know, I don't think anybody's got the opinion that ordinary people can't read the Puranas. You know, nobody's saying the Puranas are restricted just to Brahmins. Nobody's saying that, so he doesn't have to argue it.
And
everyone accepts that opinion.
And also
some of the people think that Puranas are useless. They're not authoritative. Everybody can read them, but they're not authoritative. But nobody's arguing that some people can't read them.
The Itihasas and Puranas are the essence of the Vedas, and they're, like Narada says, even more important than the Vedas.
Yes.
And they're accessible to everybody. Just as many compares that the Holy Name is also the essence of the Vedas,
yeah.
And it's accessible to everybody.
So the part about being the essence, he gives some other evidence about that in these anuchetas.
Okay.
And the part about being accessible, there's no need to argue it because everyone agrees with that.
And thank you. Another question was, so he says of the two, of the
Itihasa and Purana,
the Puranas is more important. But this quotation, it says more important than the Vedas. It doesn't explicitly...
Well, okay, it's just like this. The Puranas are singled out for being glorified in this way. Itihasas aren't. You don't have to say anything bad about the Itihasas, but you say something especially good about the Puranas. Okay, we'll move on to 17. Skande Prabhasakande cha. Back to the Skanda Purana. Prabhasakanda. Vedavan. This is further evidence for the same ideas. Vedavan nishalam manye. Further evidence that the Puranas are the most important. For practical purposes, the Puranas are the most important scripture to consult. In Kali Yuga especially. So it says in the Skanda Prabhaskanda, Veda Vanishtalam Manye Puranartam Rijotamaha Veda Pratishtita Sarve Purane Natra Samshayaha. I think it's the third time these two lines have come up in different verses. Veda Pratishtita Sarve Purane Natra Samshayaha Bibed Yalpa Shrutad Vedo Mamayam chalayishyati itihasa puranaistu nishchalayam kritakpura yanna drishtam hi vedeshu tadrishtam smitishu dvijaha ubayor yanna drishtam hi tat puranayur pagiyate yo veda chaturo vedan sango panishido dvijaha Puranam naiva janati nacha sasyad vichakshanaha iti. And in the Prabhaskanda of the Skanda Purana, we find this statement. O best of Brahmanas, I consider the purport of the Puranas to be as incontestable as the Vedas themselves. The Puranas give a firm foundation to all the Vedas. Of this there is no doubt. Sometime in the past, the Vedas feared, these people, barely trained in proper hearing, will distort our meaning. But then the Itihasas and Puranas came forward to give the Vedas an indisputable foundation. What cannot be found in the Vedas, O Brahman, is found in the Smritis. And what cannot be seen in either is clearly described in the Puranas. O Brahmanas, one who knows the Vedas along with their supplements and Upanishads, but does not know the Puranas, is not truly learned. Skanda Purana. So here, the Puranas are contrasted with the other Smritis. Okay? What can't be found in the Vedas is found in the Smritis, but there are things that can't be found in the Smritis that are found in the Puranas. So Puranas are better than other Smritis, including Itihasas. Okay, continuing. Ata Purananam evam pramanyestite pi teshamapi samasyen aprachad rupatvat nana devata pratipadika prayatvat arvachi naik shudra buddhi bir arto duradigama iti tad avasta eva samshaya. Even though we have thus settled the question of the authority of the Puranas, we must now address a doubt about their current status. Less intelligent people of modern times find the Puranas hard to understand, because the original texts are only partially available, and the deities whose worship they mostly promote are various. So, we don't have all the Puranas, actually, according to this Jiva Goswami here. And they promote the worship of different gods, different demigods, and sometimes Vishnu. Confusing. How is it, if there's 400,000 shlokas, that they're not all there? We count what we have, and it comes up to just about 400,000. So how could parts be missing? Any idea? I have an idea. Yes? Yes.
People might have manhandled the verse.
Yeah, parts have been changed. There have been substitutes, bogus substitutions of whole chapters. So, for every chapter that's been unjustly inserted, some real chapter was taken out. And so the volume is the same, but some of it's not authentic. And some authentic pieces are missing, therefore. Yes. Microphone over here. If it's
so
a general question, let's wait till the end of the
same connection. So how do we know which sections of which Puranas are manhandled?
Why don't we save that till the end of the anuchet? Okay. Let's just finish this. 17. Ata Purananam. I read that. Okay, 13. 17.3. Yaduktam matsye panchangam cha puranam syad akyanam itarat smitam satvikeshu cha kalpeshu mahatmyam adikam harehe rajaseshu cha mahatmyam adikam brahmano viduhu tadvadagnesh cha mahatmyam tamaseshu shivasya cha Sankirneshu Saraswatyak Pitrinam Chanigadyate. In the Matsya Purana says, as a historical text is a Purana if it has the five defining characteristics. Other histories are known as Akyanas. Puranas that describe days of Brahma in the mode of goodness mostly glorify the Supreme Lord Hari. And then another statement in the Matsya Purana, somewhere else. Puranas describing days, it's a few verses later. Puranas describing days in the mode of passion especially glorify Brahma. Puranas describing days in the mode of ignorance tell the glories of Agni and Shiva, and those describing mixed days discuss the glories of Saraswati and the Pittas. These are just samples. There are other demigods also glorified, but these are typical ones. Agni, Shiva, Saraswati, Pittas. Actually, 1714, next paragraph clarifies this. Atragnesh tad tad agnau patipadyasya tad tad yagyasyeti artaha Shivasya cheti chakarat chivayas cha Sankirneshu satvavajastamo mayeshu kalpeshu bahushu Saraswatya nana vanyatmaka tad upalakshitaya nana devataya iti artaha Pitrinam karmana pitriloka iti shrutek tad prapaka karmanam iti artaha. Here, glorification of Agni, the fire god, means glorification of Vedic sacrifices made by offerings into Vedic sacred fires. In the phrase, quote, and of Shiva also, the word also implies Shiva's wife. She's also glorified there. During mixed days means during the many days of Brahma in which goodness, passion, and ignorance are all prominent. Of Saraswati indirectly refers to various demigods. Since Saraswati is the presiding deity of various kinds of Vedic language. Okay, so when it says glorification of Saraswati, it means glorification of various demigods. Of the Pitta, celestial forefathers, means of the rituals that lead to attainment of the forefathers. According to the Shruti statement, by Vedic rituals, one achieves the world of the Pittas. Okay, commentary. In Kali Yuga, one cannot possibly understand the Vedas correctly without resort to the authority of the Puranas. Besides the Puranas, there are many other Smriti scriptures, such as the Manu Smriti and other Dharma Shastras, meant mostly for Brahmanas, specialists in rituals and varnashram duties. But only the clear presentation of the Puranas allow the confused people of the modern age definite access to the eternal Vedic wisdom. Even supposed religious leaders of this age are generally victims of delusion and hypocrisy. We see this tendency throughout the world. Even in India, many apparently well-educated and strictly religious Brahmins are confused about the purpose of life and the means of achieving it, mainly because they have failed to approach the right sources of knowledge. Although these Brahmanas, through the commentaries of their teachers, presume to have direct access to the Vedas, the manifest fruits of their so-called Vedic education seem to be arrogance, atheism, and entanglement in sense gratification. Some of these Brahmins, claiming to be purely Vedic, deny the authority of the Puranas, which they say teach sentimental and fanatic idolatry. Among these Brahmins are the ritualists of the first millennium AD, who followed the Jaimini Mimamsa interpretation of Kumarila and first millennium AD, who followed the Jaimini Mimamsa interpretation of Kumarila and Prabhakara, and the more recent proponents of the Arya Samaj. Thus the Vedas, as the Skanda Purana tells us, have just cause to fear abuse at the hand of the Brahmanas of our age. Hearing the Vedas call for help, the Puranas have come to assist. The instructions of the Puranas are as trustworthy as the original words of the Vedas. What need is there for speculative commentaries on the Vedas? Then, since the natural commentary on the Vedas is already available in the Puranas, But we live in corrupt times, when people need more definite guidance to find the correct path of spiritual life, spiritual progress. Even the Puranas, easy to understand in earlier ages, often bewilder disoriented modern readers. Because demigod worship gradually purifies those who are too materialistic to have an interest in pure devotional service, the Puranas, to appeal to persons of many different natures, encourage worship of demigods alongside worship of the Supreme Lord. The universe passes through varying cycles, days of Brahma, during which the lower material modes, the modes of passion, rajas, and ignorance, tamas, are at times prominent. During these periods, the Supreme Lord gracefully allows such servants of his as Lord Shiva to defeat him in competition and otherwise seem superior. Puranas that describe the events of these rajasic and tamasic kalpas thus superficially seem to elevate demigods to the position of God. It is no wonder that imperfectly informed students of the Puranas cannot discern the unity of the underlining Puranic message, that the powerful controllers and wonderful opulences of this universe are all energies of the Supreme Energetic, the Personality of Godhead. Such readers are unable to grasp this statement from the Hari Vamsa Purana. Vede Ramayana Chaiva Purane Parate Tata Adavante Cha Madhye Cha Harik Sarvatra Giyate. Throughout the Vedas and everywhere in the Ramayana, Puranas, and Mahabharata, from the beginning to the middle to the end, the praises of Lord Hari are sung. As a source of further confusion, portions of the Puranas are now missing, and in some cases have even been replaced with spurious substitutes. In recent centuries, the Brahminical community has become less and less familiar with several of the more rarely preserved Puranas. Okay, Puranas are there, but they're rare. They're not, everybody can't find copies of some of the Puranas. Thus, unscrupulous scribes are now able to distort the texts without being detected. If the Puranas are well known, then no one can get away with changing them. But when they're mostly forgotten, someone can go in there and rewrite them, and no one would know the difference. The commentaries of reliable authorities provide the only sure protection against such adulterated texts. More than 600 years ago, Srila Sridhar Swami commented on both Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vishnu Purana, taking special care to certify the wordings of almost every verse. For the other Puranas, however, there are no such verse-by-verse commentaries by standard acharyas, only citations of isolated passages. The Matsya Purana verses cited above list the deities typically promoted by each category of Purana. Theoretically, the word kalpa could be translated as written work, were it not for the verse in the very same passage clearly showing days of Brahma as the intended meaning. Some controversy over what the word kalpa means there. But in a following verse in the same section of the Matsya Purana, it says, Yasmin kalpe tu yat proktam puranam brahmana pura tasya tasya tamahabhyam tatsvarupena varnyate. See, the verses we read that are in the Anushade talk about in the kalpa. So it could mean in the day of Brahma or in a particular book. Kalpa can mean composed book. But this other statement from the same chapter says, in which kalpa, what Purana was spoken by Brahma. So Brahma, it's not in a book, it's in a time that Brahma, different times Brahma spoke these different Puranas. So the translation is, the greatness of each Purana is described in terms of the nature of the kalpa in which Brahma spoke it long ago. It only makes sense to take kalpa there to mean day of Brahma. It is illogical to translate yasmin kalpe as the text in which, because the word purana follows, in the subject case, referring to a specific text. So the purana is spoken. It's not that purana is spoken inside another book. So kalpa must mean a time in which the purana is spoken. This is also confirmed by the use of the word kalpa in the next anuchet. Jiva Goswami uses kalpa in that sense in Anuchet 18. Sudha Goswami spoke all 18 major Puranas at Naimisharanya, and the sages present accepted them as authentic. Nonetheless, three groups of six Puranas each are meant for three different audiences, depending on which of the three modes of nature predominates each audience. But for each individual Purana, the situation is more complex, because most Puranas display some mixture of the modes. For example, the pastimes of Lord Krishna and those of Lord Ramachandra, which are in the mode of pure goodness, are described to some extent in most of the Puranas, even the tamasic ones. In the Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda, Chapter 43, Lord Shiva describes which Puranas belong to which modes. Vaishnavam naradiyam cha tata bhagavatam shubham garudam cha tata padmam varaham shubadarshane satvakani puranani vigyani shubani vai. O beautiful one, the Vishnu Purana, the Narada Purana, the auspicious Bhagavat Purana, and the Garuda, Padma, and Varaha Puranas all belong to the mode of goodness. They are all considered auspicious. Brahmandam Brahmavaivartam Markandeyam Tataivacha Bhavishyam Vamanam Brahmam Rajasani Nibodhata. Know that the Brahmanda, Brahmavaivarta, Markandeya, Bhavishya, Vamana, and Brahma Puranas belong to the mode of passion. Matsyam Kaurmam Tata Langam Shaivam Skandam Tataivacha Agneyam Cha Sharetani Tamasani Nibodhata. And know that these six Puranas belong to the mode of ignorance. The Matsya, Kurma, Linga, Shiva, Skanda, and Agni Puranas. The five topics that every Purana should include will be discussed later in Sri Tattva Sundarbha. There was mention of the five topics here. They're specified later on at the end of the Tattva Sundarbha. Okay, comments, questions? You're next.
You like this Puranas being divided into tamasic, rajasic, and...
Hold the microphone closer.
Just like this Purana is being divided into three modes, is it that even the Upanishads are also divided into Sattvic, Rajasic and Tamasic?
I don't think so.
How do we understand some Upanishads which explain deviant pastimes like the Sharaba Upanishad?
There are a few Puranas that are acknowledged as describing devotional service or even pure devotional service. The Puranas do deal with different topics. Some of them deal with yoga, meditation. Some of them deal with things that are somewhat karmakanda. At least they're connected with the Vedic rituals, although mostly Puranas talk about the absolute truth from different points of view. But absolute truth can be understood as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So different Upanishads put emphasis either on Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan, and may teach different sadhanas for approaching these three concepts of the Supreme. So there's variety in the Upanishads, definitely. And those who describe devotional service, some describe Karma Mishra, Jnana Mishra, or pure devotional service. The Shvetashvara Upanishad is describing Jnana Mishra Bhakti. But I never heard anybody say that they're divided into three modes.
How do we understand some Upanishads like this Sharaba Upanishad, which explains very deviant pastimes of Narsingadev? Yeah, well, there's some of the Upanishads are describing or presenting things from the viewpoint of pure devotional service, yes. I agree. And you could discern different influences of the modes, but there's no system of, you know, officially dividing them up into the modes. Especially since, no, it isn't like that. Yes.
We saw previously the description here that because sometimes Lord takes an inferior position and allows other demigods to defeat him in the days of Brahma when the mode of ignorance is prominent, like that. So that was the reasoning given for why. So if we see, for example, in the Sharabha Upanishad, Lord Shiva kills Narsingadev. In that pastime, that shows
in
that
where?
In Sharabha Upanishad, it's explained that this Lord Shiva takes incarnation of Sharabha and he kills Narsingadev.
Anyway, there is some signs of influence, or rather predominance of different modes in the Upanishads. Some, but basically Upanishads should be in the mode of goodness. They're presenting truth, rather knowledge of Brahman. That is the main topic of the Upanishads. Whereas the Puranas, some of them deal with more materialistic topics. Okay? The Upanishads typically are supposed to be just focusing on the absolute truth. There may be some traces of modes, but it's not prominent. And nobody, I think, has ever categorized them into different modes. There are traces of the modes. But it's predominantly in the mode of goodness, the Upanishads. Because they're teaching Brahma again. Yes?
Different Puranas describe different days of Brahma.
That's what we just read.
And those who describe some of the days that are in the mode of goodness are classified as being a Puran in the mode of goodness?
Yes.
And those are the days that are... okay, which Puranas are mixed? I'm describing mixed days of
yes.
Brahma.
Mixed Puranas? Well, they're all, what I've said here is what was said here by Diyo Goswami is that we have the grouping, but actually when you look at them individually you find that none of them except the Bhavatam is purely in any particular mode. You know, they're predominantly in those three modes, but you find mixtures, you find something of the other modes mixed in other Puranas besides the Bhavatam.
Okay,
so even the goodness Puranas have got a little bit of passion and ignorance mixed in with them. And the ignorant ones have some goodness in them.
But you can have a Purana that's, like, for example, the second example.
All the Puranas are like that, except for the Bhavatam. They're not purely in any one mode, but they're mostly in one mode.
But can one Purana describe many different days of Brahma? And when it describe a day in the mode of goodness,
yes.
It will glorify
yes.
Lord Hari. When it describes a day in the mode of...
Well, the Bhavatam describes three different days of Brahma. So yes, a Purana can describe, typically focuses on the day of Brahma or more than one day.
And when it glorifies a day that's in the mode of passion, for example, it glorifies
Brahma. Yeah, but the thing is, even a
Brahma.
Day in the mode of passion is not only passion. There's some mixture of the other modes, even in the same day. To find a mixture of modes, you don't have to go to a different day. In the same day, you find a mixture of modes. We find mixture of modes in every day in our life. So certainly in a day of Brahma there's going to be some mixture. You know, from morning to noon the modes switch. There's a predominance of a particular mode, but there's always some mixture in the material world. So it doesn't have to involve more than one day of Brahma. Even in one day of Brahma you see a mixture. Okay, it's named after the mode that's most prominent, even though there's some influence of the other ones.
I was also trying to understand the statement from the Matsya Purana that Puranas that describe days of Brahma and the mode of goodness mostly glorify the Supreme Lord Hari.
Mostly.
Mostly.
But
okay.
I mean, Bhagavatam also glorifies Lord Shiva.
Come on.
No? And the most Tamasic Purana will also glorify Vishnu, sometimes.
Bhagavatam? want to ask about the pastime of Lord Shiva in Narsingadev. Can you describe or
I don't remember it. I don't know if we want to talk about it in public.
No, just
say something about Lord Shiva getting his head cut off. I don't remember. You know the details? Okay, Nityanko can tell the story. Where is it?
Sharab Upanishad.
Okay.
That's how after killing Hiranyakashipu, Narsingha couldn't be pacified and he was furious and then he got thought something should be done and Shiva appeared and then kind of described that he tore Narsingha into pieces.
Tore to pieces?
Yeah. So then, so that's, it's a very short story actually. It's a very short Upanishad.
You can translate it if you want.
Yeah. There's even one temple of that Sharaba near Chennai is the form of Shiva in which he came.
And you have to part. Okay. When did Shigadev let it happen? He glorified his devotee.
I've read some Shivaishnava articles on all this. They don't accept this Upanishad.
They say it's a bogus Upanishad.
Yeah, and okay. They have some reasons, and it's like it's a big research and 150 pages, like historical. That many Upanishads are questionable. But then there's the problem that our Upanishads are also become questionable according to their research, like Gopal Tapani and.
They say things about some of our Upanishads. Well,
yeah.
Okay, so we can't agree with everything.
Yeah, but some
all
things,
their research.
Some things make sense in that.
I know there are some episodes in the Linga Purana that where Vishnu is defeated by Shiva, also in combat. So it's in the Puranas also. Yes.
You say he also tore Narayan into shreds, although it never happened, but Lord Shiva did that and he probably allowed him to.
Okay, but he was
to glorify Lord
told
Shiva.
To do it by, yeah. By Krishna.
So maybe he had been also told by Shiva, by Narasimhadev to go ahead
and
de-manifest him in this world. Like,
yeah.
Like Bhrigu.
Defaced him.
Defaced. Like Jada killed. Supposedly killed Krishna by piercing his heel with an arrow.
Yes. So anyway, no one can actually kill Vishnu. Don't worry about that. Nobody can actually do it.
In Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a description of Narsingadev.
He
was pacified by Prahlad, but according to
the Narsingadev appears several times in every day of every Manvantara. Bhagavad Gita identifies five different Narsingadevs in the current Manvantara. So Narsingadev appears differently in their different pastimes. One time, he says, one time he appears as a domestic cat, as a little cat. Yeah, you got it? Okay. Yes. Incarnation? The dog. Okay. But Narsingadev was a cat, not a dog. Yes.
There are many people in Chennai, in and around Chennai, who are Shaktas and Shaivites. They have different methods of worship according to this pastime.
Yes.
This Sharaba's temple is a very old, ancient temple of the Shaivites, but actually it goes more further. Lord Shiva takes the incarnation of a kind of a bird which is now not present in the world, but a kind of a bird and animal together, so that's called Sharaba, and it produces another Shakti from its forehead. They call it Pratyangira, and about this incident even the Atharvana Veda discusses, it seems. So her name is called Atharvana Bhadrakali. So the Shaktas, they worship the most ferocious form of all three deities. The Shakti's form as Adharana Bhadrakali and
Lakshmi's ferocious form of Varahi and Saraswati's ferocious form of Neela Saraswati. So this is a very huge temple in Chennai where people worship in a very, very horrible, ruthless way. Things happen in the temple, but many people get attracted to that and they go there. And so according to that, Pratyangira's story, this Shakti, she appeared and she also had a form of Narsingh, but she is a lady.
Yeah.
So she swallowed Narsingh Dev and she got thousands and thousands of heads of Narsingh Dev. So it's a very ferocious form. It's okay. All worship in Chennai.
But this worship of Devi in her horrible forms is tamasic. Shankaracharya tried to reform the worship of Devi by replacing the horrible deities with benign ones. He promoted the worship of Devi in less tamasic forms. Yes.
Each time it looks like Narasimha that he tells Lord Shiva on the way, okay, that was funny. What do I have to do next time?
Yeah, he comes back for more.
It's
like Krishna getting swallowed by Bakasura. Singapore, named after what? What is Singapore named after? Simhapura. It's Lion City.
Okay.
You sure it was Nishingadev?
No, but like okay. You said, she took on the female form, so okay, now it makes sense, but as I saw this, they don't know the story, you know? Nishingadev was dressed.
Sounds like a sphinx.
Yeah. Museum, there is an ethnographic museum and they have Dashavatara horses. They kept in a display box and all of them have mustaches, even Matsy and Kurma. mustaches, yeah. Matsy and Kurma and Vamana and everybody has
okay. So some okay, you got you see with the breasts and the other ones are mustaches.
Matsy with mustaches and Kurma.
Yes?
Those were original deities worshipped somewhere, but they just brought them in.
Yes.
From India. Very funny. And also Gornitai was there.
Okay. Bharat Ram Prabhu.
Do you want to conclude on this topic? Because do you want to conclude on this topic? Because I want, my question is concerning the text. So.
Yes.
Three paragraphs ago we had that Vibhet Yalpa Shrutat Vedo. Vibhet Yalpa Shrutat Vedo, this verse. And it was translated like
plural.
Yeah, it was translated in the past, like previously, at some time in the past, the Vedas became afraid. But I think the sense in the verse is that the Vedas are always afraid that people who are less informed.
Well, I took it to mean, especially at the end of Dwapara Yuga, when things are totally confused. That's why I made it, you know, a particular time. Because there's certain times when the Vedas are really in trouble, when as described in that statement from Moses Skanda, Prabhaskanda about the Vedas were intact in Satya Yuga, but in Treta Yuga they started becoming confused and totally mixed up in the Dwapara Yuga. So there are times when the Vedas are really suffering a crisis. That's why I took it and put it past tense.
It said pura in the verse. Generally, just it said in Pura, because the Vedas are afraid that less educated people will misinterpret her, that is why sometime in the past the Puranas were given to make a foundation.
Okay, but I took it to mean that she was afraid in the past, and at that time in the past, the Puranas and the Dihasas came to their rescue. Could be either way, I think. I just took the present to be the present tense. There would just be a narrative present that didn't mean necessarily that it's actually happening now, or always happening. Present tense can be expressing universal time, so I mean it always happens. But present tense doesn't have to do that all the time.
Because if it's seen how it is in practice, because even when the Vedas were intact, it's the duty of people who know the Vedas to protect the Vedas and not allow the people who don't have adhikar
right
to read her. So
But
it seems like she depends on people who...
Right, but it seems like it's especially in Kali Yuga when the Itihasa Purana become very prominent. In previous ages, the Brahmanas know the Vedas directly, and therefore they can give guidance based directly on Vedas. Even the Brahmins don't have proper access to the Vedas in Kali Yuga. And that's when the Puranas has become especially prominent. I think that same passage can be read both ways. That it's all, you know, they're always taking help, but they're especially taking help in Kali Yuga. The Vedas depend on the Puranas, especially in the modern age. We could look at, if you want to do it, you can check where in the Purana it's said and see what the context is. You know, what's the history being narrated in which these verses occur. You can look and see. Is it talking about present or is it talking about a long time ago? You can see the context. You can do that, it would help. Okay, we're going to stop now, we're over time. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Shri Tattva Sandarbha Ki Jai.